But Mr. Greg Gunderson is going to be shorted some draft talk today because Brewer baseball's on. How dare they? So we got Gray in here this morning.
What am I going to do with so much work missing off my agenda, Joel? What will I do?
This afternoon, right around 4:10, if you hear this on the air, you hear Mr. Leverins, the Brewer play-by-play guy, go, here's the wind and the pitch. The Packers are going to take a running back with a third round, and it's lined to left field. Gray's going to be just jumping in with random draft comments during meaningless pauses in the Brewer game today.
Why do we even do mock drafts? And here comes the 3-2.
The only thing we know for sure today, maybe there's a few others, but we do know for sure that the Tennessee Titans are going to take Cam Ward. That we know, right?
Basically.
Yeah.
They haven't said it, but with as many people as are saying it, I mean, it would be foolish of them to deny it because it would tip their hand. But yeah, there's no reason to believe that the Titans are not looking at Cam Ward. They gave him attention in his pro day that they gave no other quarterback. And after they did that, if they had, so basically they were watching him like a hawk at his pro day. And if that had gone poorly, they could have then watched other quarterbacks just as closely, and they didn't. Shedeur Sanders worked out after Cam Ward, and they weren't even there.
Yeah, the over-under on quarterbacks in the first round, depending on where you go, probably at 1.5 or 2.5, because Cam Ward is going to go. Shedeur Sanders, question mark. There may be only two quarterbacks in the first round, right?
Absolutely, and that's probably why we recently heard, I think yesterday or the day before, that Ole Miss quarterback Jackson Dart has chosen not to attend physically, which I think, and I mentioned this on my show, that was a wise move because there's a pretty good chance he gets the first round camera attention and ends up going in the early second, which is the next day. Yikes, awkward, last guy in the green room.
And do you want, I mean, Shedeur Sanders is... There's a lot that comes with him. All right, is that a fair statement? There's
yes.
A lot that comes with him, not just football.
Deion claims that he's not going to be a package deal with his son, but he's Deion.
Right.
And Deion just retired Shadur's number from Colorado. And when former Colorado players were like, hey, man, like, do they deserve that yet? You know, a couple people question that. And Deion's like, you guys realize all of my jerseys are retired and nobody's ever been sore about it. So, like, Deion doesn't get that his son isn't Deion Sanders. You can't tell me that's not going to pop up again when somebody, you know, say he goes to the Browns. We're going to hear from Deion about it. Like, it's the Browns. They're going to ruin whoever they pick.
Here's why I think he's going to go to Pittsburgh, because I think if there's a coach in the NFL, your top five coaches that could handle the Shedeur Sanders situation, I think Mike Tomlin's on that list.
Mike Tomlin is the list.
You're right. Yeah.
I think Mike Tomlin is, because he's dealing with George Pickens right now. You look at George Pickens, and apparently there's been some trade conversation there. A talented wide receiver from that Pittsburgh wide receiver factory. They don't make steel over there anymore. They make wide receivers who then go and flame out on other teams. Chase Claypool, Marcus Wheaton, Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown. Take your pick. Problem children perform well in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and he might be a good fit there. They got nobody else, right? I mean, Pittsburgh is not committed to anybody, right?
No.
Anybody.
Quarterback room is, I think it's like Mason Rudolph and not much else right now. I'm not even 100% sure, because Aaron Rodgers was looking like their most likely pick.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph could get him his 9-8 he wants.
He could do that. He could also take a helmet to the dome if he fights with the wrong dude. He picked a fight with Myles Garrett. You want to give him control of an NFL team? That's a good way to burn a couple million, I think.
I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going there, and I don't think, I've heard a couple of different people. I got a text message from a friend of mine, and I was listening to a podcast the other day. There's rumblings that Kirk Cousins could come back to the Vikings for about $10 million a year as their backup quarterback. That's a possibility. They might absorb a little money. Atlanta, just they want him gone. They paid him all kinds of money up front.
Yep.
So Atlanta's just like, whatever. And that might be a good fit. I think he's a good role model. He's a good example. And it might be a good fit for the Vikings to bring him back.
Atlanta has made every indication that they want to offload Kirk. And they've made indications recently that they're more and more willing to eat the cost. He's due $20 million guaranteed this year. So any team who would pick up Kirk's contract would either be on the hook for all or whatever portion of that they were able to work out in agreement with the Falcons. But also, on top of all of that, Kirk has a no-trade clause, so whatever happens will be up to him. If the Falcons find a suitable trade partner and the ink is on the paper, the last signature that has to hit that contract is Kirk himself. He was smart. Yeah. When he went down to Atlanta, he said, you can't trade me unless I say it's okay. So if you see a deal, it's because Kirk feels it's what's best for him, and I don't know what he wants. That's the big question.
Him and his wife
right
still have charities in Minnesota, and he's indicated how much he liked Minnesota, and there's an opportunity if he wants to coach down the line, to be a part of a coaching staff. It seems like that relationship with Kevin O'Connell could be a logical one. So the Packers, you mentioned to me off air that if the Packers do take a wide receiver in the first round, that there will be a celebration in the city of Green Bay like yeah. none other, right?
Well, the last time the Packers took a wide receiver in the first round, I was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, clearly the Packers don't believe that the value is there. They've been focusing defense and offensive line. That's what Gutekunst is going to continue doing. Toby, I warned you.
Toby is equally as excited about a wide receiver going to the Green Bay Packers, or it could be someone walking through the front door, one of the two. But the Packers are forecasted right now, according to the ESPN's latest mock draft, to take
Shamar Stewart,
the defensive end from Texas A&M. If they did that, it might be a good pick, but I don't care. If they did that, that will bring boos from the Green Bay faithful.
No, this is a defensive end. This is a defensive end. Yeah. I mean, they'll be drinking, but not in celebration.
Yeah, anybody other than a wide receiver, I think, will bring a few boos, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly. Oh, boos. I heard booze.
Oh, there'll be boos. There'll be Z no matter what.
You're talking about boos in Green Bay. I'm like, it's already there.
the bad booze.
The English language is actually just three others in a trench coat. But no, Shamar Stewart. I've got two words when it comes to Shamar Stewart. Please, no. Shamar Stewart, if he is picked, he's got potential, but he's mostly what's called an RAS pick, relative athletic score. That translates to he's bigger, faster, and stronger than other players at his position. Full stop. That's it. RAS. And teams have been drafting for a relative athletic score for a while now. Notably, check out Anthony Richardson, the starting quarterback for the Colts, who shouldn't even be on a roster. Like, RAS can go great because you can't coach somebody to be 6'5", but you can often coach a 6'5 guy to be a decent football player. So the idea is get them big, fast, and strong, and the coaches will work on the rest.
I guess, if you're looking as a Packer fan, if you want to be better next year, if you want to be better right away, you have to ask yourself, what makes us better? A good defensive player, maybe the best available player, or does a rookie wide receiver, which one makes us better right away?
Win now? The win now answer is probably going to be a defensive player, specifically an edge rusher, if there's somebody available. But I tend to believe the Packers are going to focus on using what they've got at the edge rusher position. There's not a lot of contract turnover this season there, and there were some players coming on strong last season under Jeff Hafley's new scheme, which really started to pick up steam. For that reason, I think they'll try to fill the holes that have been created at cornerback. We still don't know what happens with Jair Alexander. I expect if we can get a first-round corner. That's actually kind of my pocket prediction. If the Packers take a cornerback tonight, Ja is gone because we're able to replace his production for cheaper. Even if the replacement's bad, he's hurt.
Gutekunst's response, Mike Clemens asked him directly earlier in the week. There was a quote on there about the Ja situation, and the answer was about as I want to avoid that question as could ever be stated. I think he's gone. They're just waiting to see if maybe he has some value within the draft or immediately after the draft.
At the very least, Goody is trying to preserve what leverage they might have in negotiations that are ongoing. And at this point, if we're not there, I don't foresee the draft giving the Packers ammo in those discussions. If anything, it's going to give Jair Alexander more reason to want out. That said, that will mean he has less leverage with other teams, but at that point, it could be bad blood. I'm very curious what Jair's feelings actually are towards the team right now, because he hasn't been on the field, but yeah. I'm sure in his mind that's not his fault, you know? So I hope he goes somewhere else, because we need the roster spot. We need somebody who plays all season, and I hope he plays all season wherever he goes and does great. I don't want to lose a great player, but he deserves to go do well somewhere else, and we need that to be somewhere else, I think.
Chicago Bears in the latest mock draft on ESPN have indicated that they're going to take a tight end, this Tyler Warren from Penn State, which I guess if you just isolate that pick right there, if they do take him, I mean, he appears to be a good blocking tight end. He can catch very well, obviously. He had 1,233 yards, 12 touchdowns in his senior. So I guess that makes sense when you're talking about protecting Caleb Williams, giving him a good solid outlet when he does feel pressure. So if that's a pick, it seems logical for the Bears.
It does, but I'm cautious anytime I see a mock of a tight end in the first round, because they are trendy right now with players like Sam Laporta. Travis Kelce really was held up the yoke there for quite a while. You've got Brock Bowers, rookie last year in Las Vegas, and Trey McBride just signed a massive contract over in Arizona. George Kittle, the receiving tight end, is kind of the prototype right now, but because of that, there's going to be a lot of misses, and what you're going to end up with is this guy actually just a big wide receiver who doesn't know how to block very well? That's the thing. Tight end is not only arguably one of the hardest positions to play in the sport, it is almost certainly the biggest leap from college to pros. Quarterback is kind of a special case, but if you'll entertain the conversation, many people will agree that tight end is doing two jobs, your offensive line and a receiver, and sometimes both in the same play. And when your level of competition, those guys you've got to block and those guys who you've got to beat in coverage, suddenly the guys you got to block get way bigger and the guys you got to beat in coverage get way faster, all in the same move. The tight end has a rough time moving into the NFL. So first rounder, I don't know. I think Ben Johnson's going to be more cautious than that, and I think he'll go with a higher value pick.
It doesn't look like we're going to see any Badgers involved in the first round of the NFL draft. There may be later on in the picks, but that would have been nice to see a Badger be involved in that first round. Would have added some excitement to it, but not going to happen.
No, not draft. This time around. That would have been a really cool crowd reaction for your Wisconsin. If you need to have your Wisconsin player itch scratched, Iola native Christian Welch. He was on the Packers practice squad last season, became a Raven. He's now back on the Packers. The Iola boy is back in the green and gold, at least for now. We don't know if he'll make it through to the final roster cutdowns later this fall, but for now, he's back on home turf.
Well, it looks like quarterback number one, and then we're going to go, just players that'll be like, who's that, who's that, who's that? But there is talk that the running backs are going to get some respect this year. A running back position has kind of been dissed the last 4 or 5 years, but there's talk that several running backs could go, and maybe several in the first round.
The running back market is more volatile and will stay more volatile, I think, than any other market, simply because it's dominated by the level of talent currently at the position. You've got players right now that have done well. You've got Saquon Barkley, you've got Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs. You've had some early running backs that are showing well, and because of that, the contracts have been trending upwards. They're getting paid decently, but every 5 years, the running back market flips over. They're going to be cheap again soon.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to shift from NFL draft to high school sports. We promised you our Civic Media Sports Director, Jimmy Cuska, is nice enough to take time to join us to talk about that. Jimmy, how are we doing today?
Doing fantastic, guys. Always happy to talk high school sports. And obviously with the draft in Green Bay, I think it's a great time for sports just in the state of Wisconsin right now. There's a lot happening.
Yeah, we just broke down the whole draft. We told everybody who's going to go 1 through 32. So we're good. We covered all.
We've given the insider info already. You don't have to give it away, Jimmy.
So let's talk high school, because the WIAA Board of Directors, they've been busy here the last couple of days and couple of weeks. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, there was a large increase in compensation to schools and to officials when you look at the overall number for the whole year. Some pretty significant uppings, I guess, in the some of the funding that the WIAA is putting out there, right?
I think this is overdue. I think the fact that the WIAA has been so incredibly responsible financially, even through the pandemic, that it was probably due for some of this to start coming back to the schools. Now, I think a lot of people, the misconception is that the WIAA is some kind of monolith and they dictate things to schools from up on high. But really, the WIAA is an executive board. It's the coalition of schools that put this on. The WIAA is the schools and vice versa. So this is really just an effort to kind of match what's happening at a lot of schools. I mean, it costs more to have people come out to games. A big issue with officiating, obviously, is that, you know, it doesn't pay a whole lot. Nobody's getting rich on high school sports in Wisconsin. And, you know, all of these measures, whether it's paying more for host venues to stop having to charge admission fees for, you know, the track and cross-country events, or just getting the reimbursements higher for the individuals that make high school sports happen. I think this was all way overdue. Those people definitely deserve all they can get to help us, because, you know, we can't have high school games without officials, right? So this is all moves in the right direction.
Yeah, and toward officials and also some of the host schools for certain events. Maybe there's issues with getting host schools or schools wanting to host that, so all that funding going out there. And there was some conference realignment. None of it really affected us too much here, I don't think, in the far north, but it continues to be an ongoing cycle every year or two, isn't it, that we're realigning a lot of these conferences.
Yeah, the realignment that they mentioned this week was specific to football, which has every 2 years they redo the conferences in the state. And what's going to be interesting is to see whether that gets changed now that they've completely changed how teams qualify for the playoffs, which is a whole other discussion, right? Now that there's a point system in place to qualify for the playoffs, it's no longer conference record. The idea that every conference had to have seven games, the same number of qualifying games for the playoffs, that's out the window. Now every game you play, all nine of them, if you play a full nine-game schedule in a year, they all matter for it. So is there an urgency now to every 2 years recycle and redo all of the conferences across the state? It remains to be seen, right? One thing that has sort of helped is that for athletic directors, they don't have to go out and schedule all these non-conference games. Some conferences, you know, they play a closed loop where it's 10 teams playing nine games and they don't have non-conference. And then there were conferences as small as four teams that have five non-conference games to fill. So the challenges for scheduling are out of the way with it. But I'm curious to see if that changes in the near future. But as you said, yes, the Northwoods, there ain't a whole lot of changes. I think the schools that are there, probably the biggest thing is just the growth of eight-player football in rural areas, not just northern Wisconsin, and how that continues to affect the 11-player conferences that still exist.
Yeah, and it's taken a few years. It's a logical transition, Jimmy, on the eight-man side, but we're transitioning now into a legitimate playoff system that's fair to all the kids and all the schools, because we had so many schools with some serious size differentials, but we're starting to get more eight-man teams, and so I think we're seeing that playoff system taking some good steps here, right?
Yeah, eight-player, the growth of eight-player can't be understated. The fact that they finally expanded it to a more equitable number of teams that make the postseason, I think is a wonderful, wonderful measure for the small schools in Wisconsin, because having just 16 teams make it out of a pool of teams that was getting close to, 60, 70 teams that were eligible, you're not letting in all of the teams that you would let in an 11-player where a 3-6 team could get in, right? In 11-player, if you were 7-2, there was no guarantee you were going to make the playoffs. And 7-2 or 7-1 or 6-2, because there's only eight games, 6-2 wasn't going to guarantee you a playoff spot, or 3-6 would in 11. I don't think that's very fair. So they've done a little step to correct that, right? And eight-player is going to continue to grow. Declining enrollment in Wisconsin is affecting rural schools. Over 70% of rural schools in Wisconsin have declining enrollment. So eight-player is only going to continue to grow, especially in northern, western Wisconsin, central Wisconsin. And you're going to continue to see, I believe personally, that you're going to continue to see that playoff field grow.
Yeah, and just the having conferences now, that took a while because a lot of teams were playing independent schedules for so long. But having that conference schedule, Jimmy, creating those rivalries, getting players all conference honors and recognition, that's part of that building process too, I think, and kind of getting those numbers up in our small eight-man schools, right?
Yeah, and having the all-state and all-region teams, all of these recognitions for players, teams, student-athletes, the whole works, that all plays a big part. Ultimately, you want to create a system that rewards participation, and I think eight-player, a major step, getting the 32-team playoff field and starting at the same time as 11-player, I think it's more legitimate in the eyes of skeptics. And to be completely frank, I know that there are people who only follow 11 player. They say they'll never, ever support a player. It's not real football, but I challenge anyone who's on the fence about it. Go watch a game. You'll be thoroughly, very thoroughly entertained. Mm-hmm. A-Player is a wonderful brand of football. And in Wisconsin, if we want to persist, if we want to have that community identity in the sport of football where you don't have to co-op with seven other schools, A-Player is a viable and a very exciting option for schools to take if they want to maintain their own community brand.
Yeah, I've been on the chain gang on the sidelines of eight-man football. Believe me, it's real football. It's real. They're hitting, they're playing just like any other level. We have Jimmy Kuska, our Civic Media Sports Director, with us. And I would be remiss, because every time I talk to you from now in the future, we will talk about this. NIL, of course. Minnesota has it. Illinois has certain forms of NIL. Where is Wisconsin at with that now? Is that kind of an ongoing discussion?
So tomorrow morning, actually literally 24 hours from now, the WIAA meets for its annual meeting. This is where all of the school administrators, whether it's a superintendent, an athletic director, a principal, one representative from each school will get to vote on whether or not Wisconsin will be the 42nd. There's conflicting numbers out there, but Wisconsin's one of only a handful of states left that does not have a name, image, and likeness policy in its state association. And tomorrow, it's back on the table. It failed last year by 49 votes out of close to 400 casts. So last year, it was a relatively close vote, 170 to 219. It wasn't an overwhelming failure, but a lot of the criticism was that the NIL discussion really only began in the weeks leading up to the annual meeting. And that's what caused some hesitation by athletic directors, superintendents, et cetera, to pull the trigger and say, yeah, we need NIL here. Last year, there were only about 30 states that had it. Now, there's only a handful of them left, and Wisconsin is one of them. And what's happening in a few of the other states is that without the state association taking the mantle of putting an NIL policy in place, is that state legislatures are getting involved. And believe me when I say you do not want politics mixing with high school sports associations. It can be a little hazardous for all involved. So yeah, they will vote tomorrow on essentially the same exact amendment language for NIL in Wisconsin. And as I've told people, it's a lot different at the high school level than the college level. We're not getting a transfer portal. We're not going to have high school kids that are playing, baseball, driving around in $600,000 cars. That's not what NIL will look like in Wisconsin. There are a ton of restrictions on what it will look like in the state, namely in that coaches and school staff members can't act as agents or intermediaries. And if you do sign an NIL deal, the person, organization, business, whatever it is that is paying for that deal, they can't be somebody who donates to the school or athletic programs. And if you know anything about small town Wisconsin, or even big town Wisconsin, the people who tend to generally donate to booster clubs and things like that are they're pretty much your target audience for something like NIL, right? So there are a lot of restrictions, guardrails in place on it, but it does appear poised to pass now that schools and administrators have had about 14 months to think about it.
Well, of course, Gray and I were talking about this, and he's in studio with us a little bit earlier off air about how it doesn't affect smaller schools in northern Wisconsin a lot. It may lure a player away from here, but when you get into those metro areas, like Chicago, obviously, and the Madison, Milwaukee, maybe even Green Bay, Jimmy, where you have 6, 7, 8 schools within a 30-40 mile radius, it could be an influencing factor down the line, right? And another tool for people to lure a player away from one school to another, with kind of within that same region. Is that a good logic way to look at it?
I think that the fear of that, I think, is mitigated somewhat by the fact that there are a lot of ways you can become ineligible through NIL. If, for example, if it's a car dealership offering free rides for whoever in a program, well, if somebody on that staff donated to a school's booster club program or a fundraiser, that all of a sudden makes that business ineligible for it. It's a pretty restrictive policy in Wisconsin. It's more restrictive than a lot of the other states that have passed this. I think one of the states, perhaps, that you can look at as maybe sort of a model would be a state like Colorado, where they also have a somewhat restrictive policy. But the WIAA is acknowledging that NIL is on the way, regardless of what the schools decide to do at the annual meeting tomorrow. They signed a deal with a collective in the time between the last vote and this vote, more as guidance for student athletes and really for administrators and communities as well. To the point, too, that for the NIL discussion, that if it does pass, it's going to be up to the schools to make sure that student athletes stay eligible. I had actually asked about what would happen if we as a radio, let's just use us ourselves as an example, you know, there in Park Falls, if you have a student athlete in a radio advertisement, you know, endorsing some kind of product, like a local business, a restaurant, right? And what happens if we place that inside of a broadcast? Now, remember, a student athlete in the NIL language as it's written, they can't identify themselves as a member of a school, a team, a conference, or the WIAA. They can only mention themselves as essentially themselves. And I asked, like, well, what happens if we put that ad inside of a broadcast? And as it's written, they said, well, no, that's perfectly fine. They follow up and said, we would just hope that the station broadcasting the game wouldn't immediately follow up the ad by saying, oh yeah, that's our quarterback, or that's our starting third baseman for the team that's in the broadcast right now. Yeah. It is kind of the wild, wild west with NIL in high school. Yeah. And I think that the WIAA's policy is appropriately strict. I'm not sure that the recruiting angle on it will play out as people think. This seems like a policy intended for a very, very small group of student athletes in Wisconsin. Yeah.
But it does open up the possibility, Jimmy. Let's put this scenario out there.
I can acknowledge that.
You tell me if this is an unrealistic scenario, all right? Somebody from Park Falls who maybe has got multi-millions of dollars decides, you know what, I want to see this great athlete come to play for the Shawamigan Screaming Eagles. So I'm going to offer whatever, $50,000 or whatever. I'm going to contact that family and say, you know what, we're going to sponsor them through my XYZ corporation, and they're going to represent my product, and they're coming to Park Falls, and they're going to play for Shawamigan, even though this player is from wherever, Madison or Illinois. Is that an unrealistic scenario within the current rules?
It is not, because as long as the organization isn't already contributing to some kind of school team or booster club, that's the hurrah, right? That's something that could plausibly happen. I don't know that something like that would necessarily happen, but I think it's not too difficult to envision that. The example you gave is, I think, a pretty common one. I think given the statistics that have been shared, there's a very, very small number of student athletes in the WIAA that have been ineligible because of an NIL deal or some kind of name, image, likeness issue. I think it's in less than two dozen. Fewer than two dozen. So again, I think it's going to affect a very small number of student athletes, but I would say your scenario definitely is plausible.
If Giannis has a younger brother or a cousin, people in Park Falls better learn how to spell Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, we're going to have wave two of how to spell names from other countries.
Good. I mean, the scenarios there could happen. It's an ongoing discussion. Because, Jimmy, everybody saw what it did to college sports. We saw what it did to college football, right? So everybody's like, why couldn't that happen in high school? They're kind of drawing that possibility, right?
Yeah, I think there's enough guardrails in place for it that it won't get quite that out of hand. I think college sports is a massive problem on its head with all of this, especially with the transfers. I don't know how college sports comes back from that. But in high school, at least in the early stages, the states that have had this for a number of years, there hasn't been some giant mass migration of players from one program to another. Some sports where there's a lot more money invested in high school sports, you know, like Texas or Florida, for example, yeah, there might be a little bit, especially with some of those preparatory academies. But I think by and large, when it passes in Wisconsin, whether it's through this vote here in about 24 hours or through the state legislature, I don't think it's going to have that level of impact. But, you know, I also don't have the crystal ball. If I did, I'd be telling you who the Packers are drafting tomorrow or this weekend, right?
Well, we came to the conclusion, Gray and I did, we had a little draft discussion before you came on, that if the Packers draft a wide receiver, in the draft tonight, that there will be a citywide celebration, maybe a statewide one, but the city of Green Bay will go crazy.
The song "Shots" comes to mind.
Very rolling vehicles over in the street there in downtown
Philadelphia, Wisconsin. Yep, that's exactly it. Climbing light poles and stuff.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy. We thank you for taking time to inform us. We'll have you back periodically as the high school sports scene continues to evolve and change. Thank you for taking time, sir.
I appreciate it. And if you're looking for more coverage on the annual meeting, NIL, summer contact, sportsmanship, fan behavior, those are all topics on the agenda tomorrow. I'll have full coverage coming up on all of our civic media websites, including right there in Park Falls. And you can check out all that coverage coming up here tomorrow, the annual meeting starting at 9 a.m.
Very good. Thank you, Jimmy. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Jimmy Keske, our civic media sports director. He's connected. That's a joy and obsession he has, is following Wisconsin sports and such like that. And he's a dad, too. He has kids and he coaches and stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Jimmy's awesome. And like that was, I'm realizing how much nerdiness he and I share, because I heard him mention that fan behavior will be a topic at that convention, and I'm realizing, like, wow, that actually sounds like an interesting conversation to me, and I am the only one in the county who thinks that way. Nobody else wants to go talk about high school game fan behavior as a matter of work, but yeah. That sounds fascinating.
All right, we'll let everybody go. Gray, have a great day. I'm going to be down at Wheelway in a little bit, and we'll catch you for like an hour after. Are you going to just do like a straight hour of draft talk leading up to the draft from like 6 to 7 after the Packer, after the Brewer game today?
I am now.
Possibly.
Thanks for that.
Greg Gunderson, 6 o'clock hour. If you want to lead in into the draft tonight, tune in to Greg Gunderson. He'll at least have a little bit anyway for
you. See you there.
98Q Morning Show.